Welcome to the Perfectly Sane Show, episode 755. I am Chris, as always, joined by Tony.
Well, paint me blue and coat me in algae.
Well, I hope Jeff doesn't have a knife to sneak in.
No, but I do have a 300. I have a 300 foot slit, though.
Yes. A lot's gone on. Yeah. evidently, somebody with all the cameras and security, because it's a national park, so like national park guards and the National Guard and city police. Somebody was somehow able to get into the reflecting pool with a knife and cut it 350 feet. I don't believe any of that, but. yeah, so that's going on. Tony is down there in the middle of Freedom 250 and
Freedom.
The Great American State Fair.
The Great American State Fair. They've got like the middle of the city all blocked off. It's awesome in a I wish they would all go home type kind of way.
So how long is that? Or is it like gone?
It's like 6 weeks. It's like a long time.
Jesus, it's going to be a nightmare. I'm going.
Yeah, and DC traffic is awesome all the time anyway.
Yeah,
and let's block a bunch of streets right through the middle of the city. It's great. What a great idea.
I will be down there on the 8th, staying overnight, and that does not sound appealing to me. So yeah, Tony's down there in the middle of that. Jeff's football team is moving to another state.
Why did you drive them away, Jeff?
If they do that, they're fucking stupid, but whatever.
And then there was a bunch of I don't know, the video game industry, which is what we talk about on this show, is on fire. Everything is broken.
It's imploded.
Prices are out of control. We'll get to some of that. Xbox and Sony are out here laying off people, large amounts of people. Sony this week, in fact, today, they announced they were going to lose a significant number of employees. And PlayStation CEO Herman Holst put a statement out on that. Sony bought Bungie, 4 years ago, something like that, for $3.5 billion. And now they're cutting their staff significantly. That doesn't sound good for them. Microsoft on the other side they're going to be cutting a bunch of jobs. Sounds like the cuts at Compulsion Games have already started, which is honestly better than what I expected for Compulsion. I expected them, based on the reporting from Jason Schreier, they were just going to completely close them, right? Like, that was what we all read last week.
I mean, could still happen.
It could. You're right. Yeah. So
get your hopes up, Chris. Don't get your hopes up.
Compulsion, Double Fine, and Ninja Theory were the three ones specifically reported on Schreier, but there's probably going to be cuts across all of Xbox. As Asha Sharma has said, she needs to make the business leaner. Yeah, it's a great time to be working in the video game industry.
Or not.
And it's not a great time to be a fan of this stuff either, because I don't know how you're affording it. Xbox is increasing their pricing yet again.
Great timing, because I just bought my Xbox. So
yeah, very, very fortunate. Because you bought it just now, which was after the first price increase.
Yes,
but
I got the My Best Buy membership for $35, Mm-hmm. And the reason I did that was because they were giving a $75 discount off Xboxes.
Okay, so you ended up getting a decent.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad price. It was like $540 or something.
Just still $40 more than it was when it came out, but
yes.
It now seems like the 1 terabyte model is going to be $750, $800. I don't have an actual price here. They're raising the $100 for the 512 gigabyte model, which I believe is the S, and $150 for the 1 terabyte model, which is the X, and they're sunsetting their 2 terabyte model.
Shockingly, nobody wanted that.
Yeah, the two terabyte was already more expensive anyway. Yeah. And like, yeah, would love some extra storage in it, but not for the amount that they were charging for.
And with the price of storage, I mean, it probably just made it inconceivably expensive. They're like, no one's going to buy this. Let's just get rid of it.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you guys have looked into component pricing. Like, I bought an external SSD last year for 4 terabyte for $200. That is now going for $600. It's like the shit's insane. What do you guys think this is gonna price next generation hardware at?
Yeah, I don't even want to think about it. Hopefully by the time we get there, the data center market will have crashed and things will be priced more normally, but who knows when that will actually happen. It's going to happen. We just don't know when.
Yeah.
So that's Xbox, a big problem here. It's like they're buying up all of the RAM, the memory, all the video card, like they're taking everything. Which is driving prices up. And it's not like they've decided like Xbox is like, oh, prices should be higher.
No, it's like, and this is also, I guess, the Steam machine. I keep wanting to say the Steam Deck, but it's the Steam machine that was finally revealed with a price this week, $1,049.
Yikes.
For the system without a controller. I think it's $1,150 with the controller. That's expensive.
Yes. Like at that point, you should just get an actual computer.
Yeah, like that's like I know people love Valve. I like Valve a lot too. I think they make cool shit. I think the Steam Deck is a really neat handheld. And I get the idea that this Steam machine is designed to like connect to your TV, and it's a small form factor. And that you can't build a small form factor PC for that price, generally speaking, but you can build a more powerful PC than what the Steam machine is for that price. And I guess you just have to, like, if you want something with more power that's a little bit cheaper, you can do it. You can get a mid-range PC for cheaper than that still currently. You're just not going to get it in the cool little box on the side. Shit's crazy. Where do you guys feel like this, like pricing, like we're definitely looking at $1,000, right, for next gen hardware?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't see how they could avoid it at this point. Depending on when it happens. I mean, the other thing you have to think of is, do they delay the next generation hoping the price situation gets better? Like, does this move everything further out?
They should.
Yeah. Question for you guys. Do you think we need a new box?
No, we've been on this forever. That's why, like, I don't know if I would buy it. Like, I'm honestly, like, it's such diminishing returns with these every new generation. I'm perfectly happy with my Switch too. You know what I mean? Like, so, like, I don't know, dude. Like, and I think Series X and PlayStation 5, even the base model PlayStation 5, could play really great games. Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, I don't, I don't know if I need to spend $1,000 for something I won't even be able to notice. Like, probably.
Yeah. It's like, I look at like stuff on the Xbox One and the Series X. It just, they're, there is an improvement visually between the two, but it's not that astounding. It's like small increments.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I'm with you, Jeff. Like, I do love like to buy a new console. I do love like new hardware, but if they come in at like $1,100, $1,200, like I'm really going to have to think about it to be like, is this worth it for me to buy this at this point? Also, if they both come in at that price, like I can only get one.
Yeah, I won't get both. And man, I don't know. I just don't know. I was just about to say, like, I don't know if I'd get an Xbox or a PlayStation. Like, I prefer Xbox much more. But boy, did Xbox fuck things up over the last decade or so. And it's just like...
And it doesn't seem like they know what to do yet. Like, that they've... It just seems like the ship is spinning uncontrollably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think I can't remember where I saw this criticism, but like when they went out and bought all of these studios to bring in house, they took away the incentive of those studios to make great games. Because before, when they were independent, they had to make great games in order to stay alive. And now they're like just part of the Microsoft
ecosystem. They clearly have like mismanaged them pretty badly.
Yeah. So, like they're not getting as many games out of them as they have. Or they thought they would. Like, the games that they are getting are good, but not great. It's just the whole thing hasn't been really well thought through.
Yeah,
I feel like maybe Sony has done a good job of, like, when they have these independent studios that make Sony exclusives, like they stay independent, which forces them to, you know, compete and produce good products. But Microsoft has not apparently. Doesn't believe that that has to be the case.
Well, I understand why Microsoft, why Xbox will distinguish them separately, because Microsoft is the problem here, I think.
Yes.
But I understand why Xbox did it, because, you know, coming into the Xbox One, which was a huge kind of flop, Don Matrick fucked that thing over from the start. And then you get Satya Nadella coming in as a Microsoft CEO, and his vision for Microsoft was as a service company. We're going to sell you subscription. Like, you're going to buy in. So they get everybody on board, including Xbox. Hey, how do we make this vision work? Xbox comes up with Game Pass, which they paint as the Netflix of games. And how does Netflix like maintain the, they have to have a lot of content. So Phil goes out and buys all these studios, and it's like, just make me shit to put on the service. And I think that's some of it, Tony, is like those studios that would fight hard, right? They would do really great work. Now they have Microsoft money. It's like, all right, well, we're going to take our time.
So, well, something else that I was thinking too, or I was just going to say, is like, part of it is just the nature of where we're at in terms of, like, if you look at the 360 era, AAA games could get developed and out within 2-3 years.
Yeah.
And at a much more reasonable budget.
Here's
budget that. Than now.
Keep talking. I'm going to look something up.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. It's like, they poorly managed the studios in terms of like getting stuff out, but then part of it is just the nature of game design now, where if you're doing a AAA game, it takes so much longer and it's so much more. And for what? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like, it's a mess. And a lot of the AAA games I don't really like anymore. Like, I really kind of dislike what Sony does with their AAA games. Like, I'm just telling you, Chris, like, the best games I've played this year, like, Adventures of Elliot, Mina the Follower, fucking Vampire Crawlers, and there's all games that do not have insane budgets, and they're great. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how badly we need these, like, blockbuster games. Like, well, could we scale it back a little bit?
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, the 360 era produced great games. Those are still fun games to play. They still look good. So, like, you got to find a happy medium between that and what they're trying to do now. Like,
well, here's just listen to these numbers here. So, in 2001, Grand Theft Auto 3 came out. In 2002, Vice City came out. In 2004, San Andreas came out.
Yeah.
In 2008, GTA 4 came out. Then it was 4 years in between them. That's a jump, but GTA 4 was a huge, like, visual leap over what 3, Vice City, and San Andreas were doing. 2013, so what, 5 years later, GTA 5 comes out. And now it's been 13 years for the biggest franchise in gaming to get its next game out the door. It's been 13 years since GTA 6, since GTA 5. Now, that's not every AAA studio, but, like, they're taking longer and longer in between releases. Like, Sony's output, I have been very, like, are their games good when they come out? Like, barring Jeff's dislike of their style. Like, yeah. I think they're
all decent games. None of them are like, oh, I hate this, it's awful.
Yeah. I mean, Sony has a style, I think, and, you know, that could
play. If you don't like climbing up cliffs, you're not going to enjoy it.
I would argue what Sony does with their games, like this cinematic thing that they're going for, I would argue that's dated at this point. Like, it was cool and, like, you know, in like 2008 and shit, but it's like, now it's like, I just get bored. I want a good game. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm not saying that they're bad games. I personally don't.
Yeah, no, you don't vibe with that style anymore. And that's perfectly valid. But, like, my point being that Sony's output this generation has been, like, low.
Yeah, like, I agree.
Where's the Naughty Dog game this generation?
I haven't, like, turned on my PlayStation 5 since Baldur's Gate 3, and that was not even one of their games. Like,
right,
the last game I played that they put, and it is fantastic, is Astrobot. That's probably, like, the crowning achievement this generation for me.
I loved Ghost of Yota, but I haven't turned on my PS5 since then.
Yeah. And, like, what's their next, like, I mean, Wolverine, right? Like, that's the Wolverine, next big game.
And that is when I will be turning it on again. Like, that's the...
And to be fair, for those listening that are PlayStation users, we are, like, our primary machines are either PCs or Xboxes, so, like, or Switches. Like, so we... Like, our PlayStation is our secondary machine, but there's not...
If we play a multi-platform game, we're probably playing it on Xbox or...
Yeah.
Not playing it on PS5.
But I could, you know... I guess the point is that, like, their games are... Like, they have, like, one big game a year. Similar with Xbox, right? Like, there's, like, maybe one or two a year that they're dropping. Even with every studio under the sun.
that's the thing that drives me crazy. How do you have so many studios and you can't release more games?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it Forza Horizon 6 and nothing? Where are the other games?
did they date Gears?
I think Gears is coming this fall.
Okay. Yeah, I thought they did, but that's like where. Where else? Like, it's Forza and Gears? Oh, and Halo. Halo's
two games with... But hey, even Halo, that's not like a new game.
No. It's a remake. It's a remake of a 26-year-old game. It's half a remake of a 26-year-old game.
Yeah.
Yeah, like where is, to Jeff's point, like where's the weird, like quirky stuff? Like where's the stuff that, like, yeah, not everything needs to be a Halo or a Forza, but like where's the middle tier games that Sony and Xbox used to do, I mean, in like the 360 PS3
era? Where's my Bethesda games? Like, where are those?
Yeah, that's a you want to talk about time in between.
Yeah.
Skyrim was what, 2010, 2011?
Yeah. They've remade it a couple times since then. But yeah. They haven't given us a new game. Where is Fallout? Fallout was.
That's the other thing. It's like you get Obsidian. This is maybe a bad example because, like, I guess Grounded is a big hit, but it's like, why were you not up their ass to do like a New Vegas 2 or something? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I don't understand any.
Or why weren't you like, all right, like Bethesda is hard at work on Elder Scrolls 6. Well, they were hard at work on Starfield. Now they're on Elder Scrolls 6. Hey, you can't do Fallout 5, but how about you like pick another place in the United States or anywhere in the world and make a Fallout game there? And we don't call it Fallout 5. We call it Fallout wherever the fuck you are. Like, right? Because like, you could do a spin-off Fallout game that doesn't impact whatever Bethesda wants to do proper with the next big Fallout game. Yeah, and Obsidian would be a great choice for that with their history with the series, but it's weird. It's very weird.
Concerning.
It's concerning. It's disappointing.
I don't know if there's like, I don't think I have the answers. I don't know, but it seems like Nintendo knows what they're doing somehow. Like Nintendo somehow has a game out every month. They keep their stuff. Well, their price, like they can't control the price situation either at this point. Their system's going up in price, but I don't know, dude. I feel like we're just like in a bad spot.
Yeah.
Doomed. We're doomed.
The Switch, you know, Nintendo priced it. They built it. It's more expensive than the Switch, but the Switch 2 is still like, even with the price increase that they're doing, it's still going to be like the cheapest option out there. So they're in a good spot. And one other pricing news here. GTA pre-orders went up on sale this morning, the 25th. Yeah, this morning. $80 for the base game, $100 for the Ultimate Edition, which I'm not 100% sure exactly what you get with that. Evidently, there is some in-game, like if you buy the standard edition, you will see things that are not open to you because you don't have the Ultimate Edition. But how much that is, I don't know. And people are not loving it, but I think as Tony and I talked this morning about it, people are gonna buy it regardless. Absolutely. Like,
it doesn't also matter.
Like a lot of games do that. You know what I mean? Like,
it's not unusual. Yeah.
No,
I don't think. But like,
I think the base 80 is like the only other game that really, I mean, Nintendo has $80 games, but they're mostly like Switch 2 versions of Switch games.
You guys see that Elden Ring is going to be $80.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it comes with like all the DLC, including some new DLC that's coming.
So it's not just Elden Ring, it's Elden Ring.
But like, I don't know. That's kind of Shadow. Nuts.
Well, for a game, like how old's Elden Ring now, Jeff? What, 5 years?
Yeah, something like four years.
Yeah. That it does seem a little crazy to like, even with the DLC, to be like, and now.
Like, I don't really like the DLC. Like, so
you would prefer if they were just selling Elden Ring by itself for $50?
Something, yeah. I don't think like I would love to have it on the Switch, but one, I've played through that game so many times, and two, not at $80, man. Like, hopefully they would go on sale at some point, but
but the only other really like big game was Mario Kart, and that was bundled.
I'm just saying, though, in terms of like a lot of games have an ultimate edition where you get extra shit, and people are acting like, oh, they're locking part of the game out of you away from you. Like, I guess, but like, that's not new.
It's not. I do think the way, and it could just be wording, I think that's where some of the, like, the misunderstanding is. It sounds like there's actual shit. Like, it's not like a lot of times you get like the Legendary Edition or Ultimate Edition or whatever, and it comes with the season pass for future content, and it comes with like some, like, you know, cosmetics and shit that it's like, who gives a shit? Like, I don't really care about an extra suit. There's some confusion over what they're locking behind that $20 increase. It seems like there may be like a whole type of side mission type thing, like a side activity that's completely locked behind it. And if that's the case, that kind of sucks. You're not wrong, Jeff, that like this isn't uncommon. It just, I get people are gonna be pissed about it no matter what. They could have just been like, you for $20 extra, you get a car that's draped in neon, and people would be pissed about it. But
yeah.
Did I hear Earl there?
Yes, I think you did, but then he hid from us.
I'm assuming we're talking about the GTA 6 price and the
I think some of the uproar is more about the fact that this is going to push other companies to push for $80 as a base.
Well, I think the other thing is if I am spending $80 on GTA, I'm probably not buying something else, and I think that's where it hurts the industry. Like, those other games that you might have bought that won't get purchased at all. I mean, there's a reason that all these other franchises are dodging GTA, but there are tons of like small studios that can't afford to do that, like can't afford to move their stuff out a year or they won't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And like, they won't sell any games because everybody spent $80 on GTA.
Yeah. And I mean, at WSL with the news, I assume you folks discussed already, with like the Xbox price increase, because I was just doing the napkin math today. It's like the cheapest way, if you wanted to invest in GTA at the end of the year, is $600. If you got a new Xbox and
possible, and the cheapest system, because I think the cheapest PlayStation is more expensive, and an $80 game, you're looking at like $600 just to like play the game, not the best version of the game, to play the game. Yeah. And that starts to,
I don't think it starts, I think it's been a while coming that this industry is becoming more of a luxury item. And to be fair, it's always been a luxury item. You don't need video games, but it's becoming more of a, you have to invest in it, and everything is a decision now. Because, like, yes, to the point, $80 is probably one less game for Christmas, which means that all those games in September are selling in September, and that's it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, now I'm looking at, like, the list of games I'll actually buy this year. There's not that many. I think largely because a lot of them have moved out of this year, but like, is there another game I'm going to get the month that GTA comes out? I don't think that there is.
I don't think there is any game. Unless they put Ocarina of Time out. Like,
what's the date on GTA? Did they give one?
November 17th, I'm gonna say.
Yeah, November 19th.
Okay. So.
But then.
There's nothing else in November.
Yeah, there's nothing.
Else not anymore. If there was, there's all.
Okay, I get it from the other end. As somebody who's honestly not interested in GTA, I've not been interested in since 4. It just means that there's like 2 months of like video games. It's a great time to catch up on stuff. But I guess video
games true.
Aren't at the point where they have their Barbenheimer.
Think about all the time, Earl, you're going to have to spend playing Star Wars Zero Company. I mean, you're going to get through that game a lot.
Hell yeah.
You know me and my Star Wars games.
he'll have all that time to play through Bond if he doesn't buy it before then.
That's right.
It'll be super cheap by then. I'm sure. It could be.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the big release window seems to be like end of August into like early October this year, and then it dries up.
Yeah.
GTA, it's going to eat up a lot of people's money, and I don't know. I hope what we actually see is more companies doing what Nintendo's doing. Is like, you know, Star Fox just came out. That was what, 50, Jeff?
Mm-hmm.
Like, give us a varying range of prices. Like, not everything needs to be $80, because if you price everything at $80,
I don't think everything will be. I think Rockstar can more than justify the price on this.
That's the thing, right? Rockstar can, right? And Rockstar could charge whatever the fuck they want. It's that there's going to be other stupid companies that are like, no, my game's also worth $80. It's like, yeah, is it?
I think they'll find out if their game's worth $80. But this is one of those things where I'm like, let the market decide. Like, what else are you gonna do? Like, if people are gonna buy games at $80, maybe price them at $80. But like, if you're gonna decide that every game is worth $80, a lot of them are just gonna go unpurchased.
Yep.
And the market will, like, you know, you'll be able to get those games cheaper later on.
I agree with you, but the flip side is, as we've seen, I mean, I guess it doesn't matter. We've seen countless times this year and last year. It just means a smaller and smaller industry, because everything gets laid off because some genius in the back was like, oh, you know, I mean, I think this is the first time I'm recording since my Knicks won the championship. But I think it was round 3 with the Cavaliers where, like, the coach is so big on the analytics.
That was my favorite part of the entire playoffs. Was him announcing his team was actually winning these games because of the analytics, even though they lost the games.
Yeah, I mean, you can win in your head. That's great. You didn't win.
That's great. Series. Well done.
You didn't win any games. and I feel like that's what it's going to be. A bunch of people who it's going to be the people who get cushioned, because those aren't the people who get ate off, because they're going to make a bet on, like, oh no, we're worth $80 now. And when you sell like half as much as $80, or you get $80, you don't sell as much, you're down to 40 in like 2 weeks. You might sell more, but you're losing a lot more money.
Yep. So that's where the industry's at. Everything is everything sucks. Everything's on fire. Don't get a job in the industry.
If you have a job anywhere, just keep that job.
Yeah, hold on to that job. Yeah. It's not going to be great out there. Save your pennies so that you can buy some video games to make you happy.
I'd like to thank the people at the MGM Grand for paying for my copy of GTA 6.
Microsoft's going to pay for mine. I am nearing enough money, enough rewards points to buy it. So
Jesus,
I have rewards points. I'm getting Black Flag Resynced next month for free, along with my Game Pass for the month.
Nice. So that's where we're at with that, but we have played some games. Jeff, I think you've played the most recent release. I have not gotten to it yet because we can get into why I haven't played it yet. But you're playing Star Fox.
Before you get into that, real quick, can I just I mean, it's not video game related. It is video game related, but it's not video games. Just because I'm running 8. I always run 8 nowadays. But it wasn't trivia this week. I went to a Zelda BS show in New York City called Breath of the Wild.
Breath of the Wild. That's good. That's a good name.
That is good, yeah.
And I was curious, but I was also just went because the name's so great. I will say my nerd heart was just really broken. This name Breath of the Wild, which you would think would mean Breath of the Wild, it mimics Ocarina of Time. And at some point during it, they play Ocarina of Time with a GameCube controller, and my brain's just like, this is all wrong. This is all wrong.
like who put this together? You don't know your Zelda.
When I went to the Star Wars burlesque a few years ago, I'd like to say that they were a lot more authentic to the source material.
Jeff, you're right, though. Wasn't there a GameCube disc with the Ocarina on it?
Yes, and Master Quest.
And
My friend also bought that up, which is legit. But I think when you think of Ocarina of Time, you think of the N64. But no, it was. I mean, aside from my nerd brain, I settled in within 5-10 minutes of that. It was a ton of fun. Again, it's mostly Ocarina of Time with a mixture of stuff. So Link is trying to he's on a quest to find the Divine Breath, which is of course a reference to the Divine Beast. And so there's three Divine Breaths. There's the Rudo, the Zoran, and the last one, it was the owl from Ocarina of Time, who is the guardian of light. So each one got a number, and they, it was a strip number. The Great Fairy was there, which I was not surprised by, but I was surprised by the fact that the Great Fairy's costume was more conservative in a Boyas show than it is in the actual Ocarina of Time, because she's not wearing much in that game. She's wearing some leaves. That and then the big twist, and I thought it was fun, is that Sheik in this, because the secret in Ocarina of Time, as you call it that at this almost 30 years ago, is that Sheik is actually Zelda in disguise. But they're like, we all know that Zelda, they make fun of it throughout the show. And this one, they make Sheik reveal be that it's actually Gandalf in disguise who's getting him to do the thing to get to Princess Zelda. And then Princess Zelda is not a damsel in distress, she does a musical number. The audience throws a bunch of Koroks at Ganondorf to defeat him. I pause because it's supposed to be a reference to Cox, but I'm like, no, it's Koroks. And they defeat Ganon. It's a really fun show. It was about an hour and a half. It was very charming, delightful. Would watch again.
Nice. That name is good.
It is a very good name. It's
very, very good. So not Zelda. Unless you are playing Zelda, I don't know, Jeff. But
no,
you're playing Star Fox.
Yeah.
How's Star Fox? How's that uninverted controls?
I tried uninverted flight controls because I was playing Lego Star Wars, which I don't think I've talked about that on here either, and that does that, and so I was used to that. But then, today after work, I went to go play it. I'm like, this just feels wrong. I can't do this. like flight controls are the one thing, I am used to it being inverted. You know what I mean? So I went back to inverted. But I was just my brain is, broken because I'm just sometimes you think one way. Sometimes you think the other. Also, I did the tank level, and I had to. That felt wrong to have it inverted, so I did uninvert the tank aiming. So that's the whole thing. But Star Fox. It's Star Fox 64. I don't know.
It's just prettier.
Yeah, I don't.
You don't know if you like Star Fox.
Hot take. I don't know if this is very good.
Ooh.
I am kind of surprised the reviews and scores were for it. Because, it's just not enough. I'm sorry. Like, I played it for like 45 minutes and I'm almost done with it. And
yep, that's about right. Yep.
And the gameplay and things about it just feel old now. Like, I don't know. Like to me, you know, a lot of reviewers gave this game like an 8. I'm like, an 8 would mean this is something new. It somehow revitalizes this franchise. And like, this is just, it's just Star Fox 64. Like, I
don't think that's what an 8 means, but
for me to give this game an 8, it would have, like, to me, that's way too high a score for a straight remake of Star Fox 64. I maybe it's more some people's cup of tea, but like I've told you guys before, like, I love the original Star Fox. Like, but again, it's just like, okay, we're doing this again, and there's like nothing new. Like, you couldn't add like 3 levels? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's 7 levels long. Like, I don't know. That's where I'm at with it. Like, I'm not super impressed by it. And,
well, that's disappointing. Because you came out of the demo pretty high.
Yeah, well, yeah. So I'm surprised to now, like, having played more of it, just being like, it's just this feeling of, that's it? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's pretty fun. Like, Star Fox is a fun on-rail shooter, but, like, it just, like, to me, it feels pretty fucking dated. Doesn't do a lot to justify. Even a reduced $50 price point just feels way too high for it. It's not bad. It's just, I don't know.
It's Star Fox 64. It's
Star Fox 64. Yeah. Like, it's...
I would be playing with it with you, except I had a gift card to GameStop, and I pre-ordered a digital code from them.
Oh. How did you get the code that made?
Yeah, exactly. They haven't sent it to me yet. What? I can. They haven't sent me the digital code yet.
The fuck?
They took all the money off of the gift card that I had.
Of course they did.
And they charged me like whatever, the $2.99, whatever it was, $3 or whatever for tax onto my credit card. So they've charged me for it.
And then they're gonna go out of business tomorrow. See ya, sucker.
Yeah. And they've not delivered me the code. But I can go on there right now and I could buy, like, if I had my gift card, I could just buy it. And they would deliver me a code instantly.
Right now. Like, oh, that's so weird. Yeah.
So I put in a support, because like you can't call them. There's no number.
There's Jesus no one to call. Christ,
man. So like you have to email their care at GameStop.com. And I was like, yo, where's my shit?
As you should.
And they've not responded yet.
Have you seen this happening to anyone else? Or
I've never heard of anybody pre-ordering a digital code off of GameStop. I was just like,
this is your punishment for being a pioneer.
Yes, exactly. It's like, I shouldn't have done it. I should have just waited till it came out and then used the gift card then. But I was like, they'll email it to me. I'll get it. I'll have it in the morning. I'll put the code in. I'll do it from my work laptop on the web, and like it'll instantly download onto my Switch 2. So when I get home, it'll be ready to go. No.
That all sounds great theoretically.
Yeah, in theory, sounds great. Did not work that way. So I'm not there with you, Jeff. I feel that I will be a little bit higher on it than you, but
I think you might. I don't know. I don't know. Because like most critics are higher than me on it. But like, there's just something about it. Honestly, like my main feeling is just, that's it. Like,
I feel that there are people that play Star Fox and like, yeah, that's cool enough. But like, it is really only like an hour to an hour and a half long.
Yeah, yeah. When I gather people, community most times. But yeah, I'm also it's a double edged sword because I get Jeff's point, and but it's also like an almost 30-year-old game. I understand that re-releasing it could, because I mean, let's be honest, people who grew up with the Wii and the Switch, Star Fox is before their time. But it's
But it just doesn't feel like a game that would catch on today. You know what I mean? Oh yeah, we put a new fresh coat of paint on something that I don't think people would be into.
I guess we'll see. I feel like this is somebody who's actually never really played a Star Fox. I feel like it's just one of those things where it's pure kind of cheat. Like it feels like if it came out like 2 years ago around Top Gun Maverick, it would have been a very talkative town because it has that energy. But yeah, I'm curious to see what becomes of it, because from what I gathered looking into this game and before, is that they've not been able to get past Star Fox 64 in 30 years. It's the third and a half remake of the game. It is everything they've done that's a sequel was just not well received, and I am gonna just be distracted real quick. For some odd reason, fireworks are going off outside my apartment. It's very curious, but I do not know why.
it's about 10 days early.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, and these are curious fireworks. I don't know if they're practicing for the 4th of July, but I'm just looking at this, and this is stunning. Sorry. I'm on my couch, and there's fireworks going off, and because I have a high enough apartment, they're far enough away that you folks here, you can't hear them.
Yeah.
But it's such a lovely sight to see. I'm just like watching this, and I don't know why. But yes, I feel like I will end up picking up Star Fox. My beef with Star Fox is like not Red Dead Heaven, but Splatoon's out in like a month, and that's one when I'm really looking forward to. I picked it up before I left the house today. The Marvel Maximum Collection. So I'm like, do I have time for this? Again, it's a very short game, but do I want to spend $50 on that?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a dollar to like enjoyment ratio there for sure. Well, hopefully I'll get my code at some point and I can tell you what I think of it. But Jeff, you've also been playing the other big new game more than I have. I played a little bit of it, so I could talk a little bit about it. But The Adventures of Elliot, which came out about a week ago.
Yeah.
Now. And you finished it, I believe.
Yeah.
So tell us about Square's Zelda, 2D Zelda-like.
Yeah, so that is, you know, if you're interested in what, like, Square's attempt at a Zelda would be, this is it. And it's pretty awesome, man. Like, I really, really enjoyed it. Like, picture Zelda, like, 2D Zelda with, like, some RPG elements. And you could kind of, like, there's different weapons you could use. You don't just have to use a sword. And like it has the things that like you would have in Zelda too, like a boomerang, bombs. And if you wanted to, like I guess you could main the boomerang. You know what I mean? Like, but there are like I think several weapons that make more like likely main weapons that are not just a sword. And including my favorite, I would assume everybody's favorite is just like the scythe that's like on a chain that you can swing around. Just feels really good. Scythe. Yeah. Yeah, it's a scythe. I don't know what they call it. But it's like a scythe on a chain. And you swing it in a circle around you as you're charging it up. And then when you let go of the charging up, it shoots straight forward really far. But, you know, you can like... all the weapons... So the RPG element in this game is something called Magicite. Which you'll get these like shards of Magicite, and you can go to a vendor and spend them, and it's kind of like a
they create like buffs.
Yeah, but I'm trying to explain. It's like a lottery vending thing where it's like
Jeff, was it a Kasaragama? Is that what they call it?
I have no idea.
It's like a Japanese weapon, and it is exactly, it's like a sickle on the end.
They don't call it that. They call it like scythe chain or something. Like,
oh my god!
But it is like that weapon that you've seen in movies.
It's probably called that in the Japanese version, Tony. But for Americans,
yeah. For Americans,
it's just, we
don't understand nunchucks. These are like rope sticks. That's what we're gonna call rope sticks.
I was gonna say it sounds like Europe when they got rid of the nunchucks for Michelangelo because they were too violent, and they literally gave him a rope and they gave him a grapple hook essentially.
go on, Jeff.
Yeah. Anyway, so like, you spend the magicite shards to get magicites, which are like basically kind of like the trinkets from Mina the Hollower. It's like things that you could attach, but you're attaching them to your weapons. And so like for the scythe, at one point I got like, as you swing it around and charge it up, it shoots fireballs out in front of it to attack the enemies, and never took that off. For the bow and arrow, there's a really awesome combination of magic sites you could do, which is like, The arrows have a 60% chance of lighting the enemy on fire, and then another magic sight you can attach when you get is like enemies on fire experience explosions. So it's like just attaching those two things to your bow and arrow, you could like kind of like destroy most bosses with that. And I found all that stuff really neat. And That said, I don't think the dungeons are good as Zelda dungeons. They're fun and they got cool little puzzles and stuff, but usually you could probably complete them in 10 to 20 minutes tops. Like, you get through the dungeons pretty quick. I'd say that the map is kind of small, even for a 2D Zelda, but interestingly, you travel through four different time periods in it, so you got a little like Chrono Trigger in there. And like, say you're in a different time period, if you go to where a temple was, you could go do that temple again, but it's going to be different. That was really neat. There is room for improvement in everything. Like, I really like the game, but it feels like a first attempt at them doing this, and I would love to see this like fleshed out in a sequel and made bigger, and get more ambitious with it. So I hope it's a hit, and I hope we get a sequel and that it's even better. But what is there is a really fun game that, despite the fact that it's over too quick, I feel like I finished it in under 12 hours. I'm still like playing it. Like, I'm still going around the map. Like I actually found a dungeon after I had beat it yesterday. I found a dungeon that I had not done. So like, that's the other thing too, is like, not all the dungeons are even mandatory. Some of them are just there for you to find. And then there's all like little shrine type things too, that they're really short. Like, you know, picture like a little Zelda shrine. Yeah. But like, you usually get some sort of cool new ability. You have a fairy that follows you around, and like, you know, for instance, one ability it gets is that it could light itself on fire, so you can like hover it over like things to, you know, like light a torch on fire. But you get more and more abilities, or, you know, you might find a shrine and it's really quick, kill all the enemies, and you get a shard of life, which is basically just a heart piece from Zelda. Same idea. The other thing I should say before, like, I kind of wrap it up here, I guess, is like, I thought that Square really did a great job of doing 2D Zelda style combat. It feels really good. I was kind of skeptical going in on that, you know, because I'm used to their 2D HD games just being all turn based, but the combat feels really good. So I say, if you're a Zelda fan, this is definitely worth checking out. Just, you know, no, it's not as good as Zelda. It's a little short, but so, yeah, that's Adventures of Elliot.
you didn't do any of the side quests, right? Or very little.
I did some, but yeah, like you could definitely probably get another 10 hours out of just like trying to do everything. Like there's one thing in the game where it's like there's a guy in the main town who likes cats, and you're supposed to bring every cat you could find in the on the map to him.
That's definitely how you get the true ending for the game.
Oh, really? Yeah. So like
that's collect all the cats. Yeah.
And I kind of ignored that for a while. I don't know why I ignored it, because like you could honestly, like, if you see a cat, you just go up to it and press A. And it doesn't take up like a spot in your inventory or anything. You just have the cat on you now. It's so, like, you could carry a million cats on you. You could find every cat on the map and then just go back to him and give them all to him. You know what I mean? So I don't know why I ignored it for a while. And you could get, like, you know, collect 5 cats, you get this. Collect 10 cats, you get this. You know what I mean? And then
it's like incremental collectible.
Yeah. Like the medals are in Dragon Quest.
Yeah.
I don't know, Chris. Like, you said you didn't play much of it, but I really enjoyed this. Like,
yeah. So I played basically through what I assume is the tutorial, like, which is extended out a little bit more than I thought. So like, you start out, there's like a little tutorial area that kind of shows you how to do combat, and then there's a bunch of more story shit, and then they're like, hey, go to this temple, but it's not a real temple. It's like half a basically, it's like a baby temple. Like, it's only a few.
A lot of them kind of are, though, dude. Like, that's kind of how they are. Like,
there's only like, because like that first one is really only like 4 or 5 rooms. Like, then you go to I assume it's a real temple, but it still feels a little tutorially, where you're rescuing the other adventurers in it. That one takes a little bit longer. Like, it's short, but
yeah.
And now, like, that's where I ended up. But I liked what I played. Like, I think there's some decent platforming throughout it. Like, it is top down, which is funny. I watched a YouTuber talking about it, saying he's horrible at 3D platforming. And I'm, like, talking about this game, and I'm like, it's not 3D, though. Like,
yeah.
It's you're working on a 2D whatever. It's... but yeah, I really liked what I played of it. It's a super pretty game. I mean, all those HD 2D
yeah, that style is awesome.
Generally are, but it translates really well to this style of game. So,
which I was, like I said, I was skeptical of. Like, I really was. I was not hyped for this game. I was very skeptical. It scratched that Zelda itch, dude.
The one thing you didn't talk about, maybe it changes, but I remember you had talked when you'd first started at like the dungeon music not super great. Like, I don't love the music that I hear so far. Like, it's fine,
dude. It makes me feel too much like I'm playing one of their JRPGs. Like, it just doesn't fit. Like, I think my problem is that, like, since I feel like I'm playing a Zelda game, I think of Zelda themes, which are amazing.
Yeah.
And this JRPG music is just not my style. Like, I just don't like it as much. So it might not be an issue for anyone, but it's so, like, you're like, the very first dungeon you do is called Mist Runes. And so, like, it's this creepy, misty, like, you know, kind of crypt that you're going through. And this is the most bombastic, in your fucking face music. It's like, bah, 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 bah. And I'm just like, dude, this is not fit. Like, this does not fit the setting. Like,
it should be more moody. Like,
yeah, like
earthreal. Like.
And, like, you know, Zelda is so good at that. You know what I mean? So, like, I know it's tough to compare to, but it just feels like Square falling back on what they know. But, like, it just, to me, does not fit. I was talking with Sean about this, and he's like, oh, just, you know, he kind of agreed with me on that one. He's like, I like the music generally. And I kind of would say I generally did not like the music. Like, it just too often reminds me that, you know, that it's not a pure Zelda game. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just that. Even in JRPGs, like Dragon Quest, I think the music and Dragon, like, I just don't like that type of music. I think is fucking garbage.
I've never liked the Dragon Quest music. Final Fantasy music generally.
Final Fantasy, yeah, it's good.
But
even that doesn't quite fit Zelda. You know what I mean?
No, like, absolutely not. And I don't know who did the music for this. I know this is the Octopath team that did this, and I like the music in Octopath Traveler.
It
doesn't fit.
Yeah,
the action adventure type game that this is.
I never came around on the music. I did forget to mention that, but at some point I just gave up caring about it. You know what I mean? Whatever.
Tony, what have you been playing?
So I've been playing a lot more of Hearts of Iron 4.
Mm-hmm.
I have finally conquered the mountain.
He solved war, guys.
I solved war.
Good.
I defeated I conquered Russia. Like, I did the thing that everyone fails at.
It's impressive.
It took a lot of investment of time and like research and like figuring out how to do this. Like, the actual gameplay to get me from Germany in 1936 that doesn't have an army at all and has nothing to a Germany that can conquer the Soviet Union I beat them in December of 1941 took like 100 hours of gameplay. it was an achievement. Like, you have to like design your whole economy and like go through and build each individual type of division and like do all the production and then figure out like, okay, how do I like distribute all these units, like develop like the tactics you're going to use and like formulate battle plans and then actually do it. It took a really long time and it actually felt like an achievement. Like, actually being able to do this was really, really fulfilling. And so now I'm in like May of 1942. I've conquered Russia. It's now part of Germany. And I'm like, what do I do next? And like, I'm still at war with the United Kingdom and the United States. And like, it's a great challenge. And I'm like, I need a break. That's a lot. That took a lot out of me.
I mean, you've been poking at this for quite some time. So
yes, and I finally got to the point where I feel like I'm getting good at it. I want to play the game. Like, I want to keep going with this playthrough, obviously, but I want to try like other nations. Like, I want to see like, okay, can I do this with like Japan, or like what can I do with like a smaller nation like Australia or like Italy or something like that. Like, poke around with a different kind of country, because obviously like Germany in World War II is like the antagonist, like the big bad, and it has lots of resources and can do all this stuff, and what can I do playing as somebody else now that I know how the game works. So I look forward to playing more of that, but I need a break. So I started Forza Horizon 6 finally.
Okay. Yeah.
That game is a Forza Horizon game.
Yes, it is.
It feels exactly like its predecessors, which
for better and worse.
Yeah. It's been a while since I played a Forza game, so it's nice to like get out there and drive around and, you know, see the drive avatars of your friends and use them so that you don't have to actually corner.
I'm just gonna slam into you and push you out of the way.
The number of times I'm just like, well, I could corner correctly by braking, or I could just run into your car and it will keep me on the track. I'm gonna do that. The only time I actually bother cornering correctly is when I'm in first.
Because you have to, because otherwise you're gonna.
Because you have to, because there's nobody to bounce off of.
So I'll be interested as you play more of it. I really like it. I'm still playing it daily.
Yeah.
But I do think that like for as similar as it is, they've added some like really good quality of life improvements. Like, and I Jeff said they had this in 5. I don't remember it being so. Maybe they added it in, but in this one, like wherever you drive, once you've driven on that part of the road, you can fast travel back to it, like just immediately. So there's no like you have to drive, you have to fast travel to this spot, or you have to pay to fast travel, which was a thing in past games. It's just like you can just fast travel here now. So, which is great because the map is huge.
Yeah. Which is like, if you're looking at it, you're like, where's the rest of Japan? But so far, I feel like I've driven on a tiny, tiny portion of the map. And there's a lot more to experience. The one thing I have, I mean, having played a couple of hours of it, like, it doesn't feel very Japanese so far.
Yeah, I could see that. Like, it just feels Forza.
Yeah, it feels very Forza. Like, could this game be in any country right now? Yes. Did it, like, show, like, have I seen cutscenes where there's very Japanese things in them? Yes, I would like to get to those parts, please. like, let's take advantage of the fact that the game is in Japan. And I don't think it's quite done that yet, but again, I haven't played that much of it, so.
I think some of that is like the opening of that game is like, hey, we're going to drive you into Tokyo City.
Yeah.
And like, that's neat, except Tokyo just looks kind of like a city.
Yes.
At night, like you can go into Shibuya Crossing, like that looks really cool. And like, there are things though that you will eventually unlock very, very Japanese-ish, like, kind of racing stuff. Like there's definitely like a, I don't know if it's called Togue Racing or I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's basically a one-on-one driving. It's a one-on-one race where you're like drifting down a mountain.
Oh,
which is very Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift coded. so there's some neat stuff in it. Also the collectibles. Well, some of them are just like the bonus boards, which have been there for years. But there's also, because Japan is very big on, each of their regions has like a regional mascot. And the collectibles in this are each area of the Forza map that you go to, like the sub-districts, they all have...
Like find the Tanuki in this area or whatever.
Yeah, and like find like 20 of them. So it's like each one has like a set of collectibles to find, which is neat. Like, I wish they were actual mascots, like actual like things that look like people in a mascot suit. It's normally just like a, like, oh, here's this rice bowl off on the side to smash, but there's some Japanese stuff in it, but yes, it very much feels like 3, which feels like 4, which feels like 5.
Yeah.
Except Mount Fuji is
yeah, Mount Fuji's in the distance now.
well, enjoy. It's definitely up there for me. I'm still, as I said, playing it daily, so. Anything else besides that?
Nope, just those two things.
Earl, what have you been playing?
As I've noted constantly, I don't play video games anymore. Yeah. It's something I need to work on. Again, it's the same rotation: Helldivers, Fortnite. Power Stone, because I bought the Marvel the Capcom Fighting Collection 2, because that was on sale. Yeah. I've been playing some Power Stone. Like I said, I got the Marvel, what is it, the Marvel Maximum Collection with the X, you know, capitalized the Maximum for extra. But I got that beforehand. Fire Emblem, Three Houses. I talked about the Star Fox demo. I had the Rhythm Heaven demo I need to try out. But yeah, I'm in that weird thing of, I want to play Lego Batman. I want to play Bond. I don't want to spend 70, 80 bucks on them. So we'll see how far my cheapness wins out.
Let's see if I can convince you to buy Bond, because I have played it I finished it yesterday,
or
the day before. I finished it in the last couple of days. I don't remember. I still play it because I am like 3 achievements away from having all of them. So what I'm missing are just collectibles in the game. The game, once you finish it, you can basically load into any chapter, and then they segment the chapter as well. So it's like, okay, load into chapter 3, and then here's the 6 different checkpoints that are through the game. So IGN has a pretty good guide up that's like, if you load into this chapter, and here's the segment that you want to load into, and then you can just kind of walk and pick up your collectibles. So I'm almost done with that. But 007 First Light is by IO Interactive, so it's the Hitman guys, a game that I appreciate a ton, but I'm awful at. I didn't know how.
Okay, so this I have to hear, because that was one of the reasons I wasn't looking forward to it, because I'm terrible at the Hitman games.
Yeah, so
can't be one, terrible at Hitman. You just
do whatever. You can.
Yeah, you do whatever. I can beat Hitman, Jeff, but I am bad at it. Like when Tony plays Hitman, it's like, yeah, Tony is an amazing
murderer. He's a murderer.
He's an amazing.
It's made for me. Yes.
Yeah, I've put up some good times on levels and stuff.
Yeah. So 007 First Light is it's Hitman-y. Like there's the DNA is there, but it is very much more, and this is where Jeff is gonna like tune out completely, because it is more of a cinematic action game, like more akin to like Uncharted than Hitman. So where the DNA comes in though is there are, when they give you the open areas, and they will, like there are a lot of open areas, you're given a task to do, and you can then approach doing that task in different ways. So you can get a key card. Like there's one point pretty early on, you're in a hotel and you have to get into room 205, but the lock on the door is busted. So you can't just go in through the door, and you can't just kick the door down because there's people around. So you have to find a way to get into that room. And there are like 3 or 4 different options for you to approach it. That's where like the Hitman-y aspect of it comes in. And there's like things in that level that I did not discover, but going back and doing the collectibles, like shit, like I could have done this, which would have given me access to this area, which would allow me to do something a little bit differently in this level. It all still ends up at the same point, because you're playing in a Bond movie. Like you're controlling James Bond in a cinematic action game, but there's a whole lot more freedom within it than where Nathan Drake doesn't have freedom. Like it's like, here's your path. This is like when they open it up a little bit, there's way more options. And I think I was explaining this in the group chat to you and Tony, Earl. There's a car chase scene right after this hotel sequence. And when you're in the car chase, like it's like you can't just go anywhere, but they do give you some open options. And like there's always something like catching the corner of your eye, like, hey, you want to go here, because if you do that, it would be cool. You can just stay on the road. That's boring. Who wants to do that? Like, you're going to want to go through this fence and jump down off the hill, which ultimately leads you to this point where they've been ushering you and giving you hints to like do the cool thing. And then you come across this thing that is very scripted, and I'm pretty sure there's no other way around it, is you're coming around a bend and they're like, hey, there's like the road is basically blocked off. There's an accident, but there's this thing off on the side that's like, I could do this and that would be awesome. And you go do it and it is awesome. And it's like, that feels very Bondish that like he would choose this, but you also in the moment you feel that you've chosen it, not the game like forced you to do it. And it feels really cool. And like the whole game has a ton of these moments where it feels neat. Like that. There's also some moments where it's a little too video gamey. Like there's a boss fight. I'm gonna call it a boss fight, but it's not. There's a few instances where there are enemies that have a bigger hit meter than normal. And you can't fight this guy head on. Like he is gonna beat you. So you have to use your gadgets to blind him or set off other things in the environment to do damage to him. And that's neat, but it also, the way I ended up playing it was I was like basically running away from him, trying to get to a spot to set up a trap to do it. And it just felt very video gamey, which I guess Hitman can feel that way, but when you're playing Hitman well, it doesn't feel like a video game. So I feel that this is
it
way
feels
more
like
forgiving.
Real life, obviously.
I'm the one thing I would, I guess, counter, even though it's still video gamey, is it's kind of reminiscent of some of the old Bond henchmen. Like he can't like Oddjob, he can't beat Oddjob in a fight. So right. What he does is he tricks him into like throwing his hat into the cage, and when he gets to the electrocutes the cage, which is in theory kind of very video gamey. It's like you got to set this thing up for this other person to kind of be defeated.
Yes, and like the whole situation, the whole thing they set up is very Bond. Like it is very much a James Bond like setup. It is just like, oh, you're gonna make me do this like three times to beat this guy. So it just feels like a little bit repetitive,
yeah.
As you're running around and it's, I'm sure another player could approach it in a different way. And because they're playing a little more stealthy or they are just, you know, quicker at identifying things to do in the environment that they might have a slightly better experience there. It didn't ruin my experience. I was just like, in that moment when I was doing that boss fight, I was like, I'm playing a video game. but throughout the entire thing, like it is always paying respects to previous Bond movies, to previous Bond games. There's like a bunch of like collectibles you'll find there. He feels very Bond, which you kind of worry about with like them doing basically an origin story for him, because this is him being recruited into MI6, into the 00 program. Mm. But they lay it all out. It's the story is really good. It all plays real well. There's good like low moments too, where it's like you're basically rooming with two other 00 candidates, and you have to move into the apartment or you have to hang out with them for a little bit before your next mission. So it gives like all the characters some room to breathe and feel a little bit more like actual people than just like, oh, here's your Sully and he's just going to do whatever you say. Like these people are a little more fleshed out. I really, really enjoyed it. I do think, and this is maybe a little bit like a Bond movie in that, okay, you do this big climax and then like it reveals that like that wasn't really the end. There was like a bigger villain or there's something else you have to complete. It does that maybe one too many times. There felt like there were two natural endpoints for the game, but then it like continued on after each one. not to say that the final level wasn't fun. It is. It just, it's like, okay, you could have ended it a level before or a level before that. It's very, very good. It is, I would say it's my favorite game I played this year so far.
Wow.
I really, really, it's a super pretty game. Voice acting is great. I think
the lighting, awesome. Bond.
The Bond stuff is great. Like he has gadgets. Like you, so much like in Hitman, where you select a loadout for your mission, when M's the one giving the missions, but she basically is like, hey, like here's your mission. Go down to Q Lab, get set up, and then go see Money Penny, and she'll give you your briefing. So you're like walking through the MI6 building or going up and down the elevators. But you go and you like set up in Q Lab, and as the game progresses, there are more, you'll unlock more gadgets to use to bring with you, but you can't bring them all. So you have to like make a decision, like, do I want the laser strap for my watch, or do I want the flash bag, like they're like wireless earbuds. That's what they look like, but they're, you throw them and they'll create like a flashbang. Or do I want the poison dart, or do I want, there's like another, there's a handful of them. I did not use, I fell in love with the laser and the dart. There's a missile pen that you get. That one's pretty neat. Where you have to, and there's two different resources you can collect, battery or chemical. And so when you run out of that, you then have to find more to, like, if you want to use the missile pen again, you need to get more chemical so you can kind of reload it. But there are a bunch of different gadgets to use. Those gadgets allow you access to different parts of the level. So like if you don't bring the laser strap along, you may not be able to get into this one area that you have to get into. So you have to find an alternate route into it.
I like that. So yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I think it's really, really, it's a really, really neat game. IO is like, they knocked it out of the park with this. And I think it's I know, Jeff, we were talking just a little while ago about like Sony style of game and the
cinematic. Yeah, that's the thing. That's one thing that makes me hesitant about it. Just like,
and
I don't care about that.
I think what IO has done here is they've elevated that style of game. I think it's better than anything.
By being just as much game.
There's a ton of game here. Like, it's not just
playing
a scripted sequence.
That's what I was just going to say. It's like, it seems like they give you freedom to do different things, and it could feel like a scripted sequence, but it's not, because you do have choice. And that sounds pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's like, there are obvious, because you are playing through a story, there are going to be moments that are like highly scripted, that it's like, you, this has to happen. Like at one point, Bond gets captured and handcuffed to a chair. Like he does not get hit in the balls. That sequence has to happen, but then like leading up to it, there were a whole bunch of choices that you could make or not make. And one of the things that you'll do, Jeff, is you'll eavesdrop on conversations, which will give you, which is similar to Hitman, right? Like where you'll listen to something and you'll get intel on another opportunity to do something. So it's like, I need to do this. How do I get in there? And you're listening to the conversations in the area, which will give you different routes to take to reach your goal. So it's not just like in Uncharted, where it's like, all right, well, here's a kill box and you have to kill all the enemies in it. And there's no alternate route to that. It's just, here's this kill box. If you're good at stealth, or you're good at using your gadgets, or being able to move around, also you can like bluff your way out of it, because he's a very charismatic character. That's the thing that you can do, is like, you can walk out into a group of enemies that they're not looking for you yet, and you can bluff, which will give you a little bit of time in the area to either walk by them or to get what you need in that area without them attacking you. And the other thing is that he doesn't have his license to kill at all times here. It has to be granted to him.
Oh gosh.
Which is, I understand what they're going for. It's a, because like, you have a license to kill. Like, that's it. It's not like, okay, your license is off on Monday, but you get it Tuesday. But I understand what they're going for. They don't want you to fight, like, engage in combat, but it is
right. They don't just want you, like, running out there and, like, murdering everybody, because, like, the one, you know, that would be crazy. Like, I mean, Bond does kill a ton of people in the movies, but he doesn't just walk into an area and kill everybody. Like, it's normally he tries to do it a little bit stealthy or a little bit cool. But once the enemies like get annoyed enough at you and their intent is to kill you, then you have free range to kill them as well. And I think the shooting is pretty good. He also has this like Batman type focus that, which, as you do things, it fills up a meter, and then you can like press, I think it's the left stick, you press it in and time slows down. So you like can aim a little bit better with that, or utilize it to move around somebody. So it's, he's not a superhero, but he has like neat abilities that are kind of like super spy-ish, I guess. It's a very good game. I could see myself recommending this if you guys haven't played it by the end of the year. Be like, hey, this is one we should definitely be talking about it at a Game of the Year. So get on that.
Get on it.
I assume it'll be on sale at some point later in the year too. But
yeah, or if Target does like their buy two get one free sale, bunch of games. But again, yeah. I might crack sooner rather than later. I just feel like the moment I crack, it's going to be like when it goes on sale for like $50.
Right.
it's all, it's like, Earl, you could wait. Like, you could be like, all right, I've waited. It's $50. You buy it for $50, and then 2 weeks later, it's going to be $35.
Yeah. That's the other thing. That's the insidious thing about game prices rising, where you feel like when you buy a game at $55 now, you're getting a deal. It's like,
I don't think I'm getting a deal, but I will.
You know what I mean, though? Like, it's not the same as before. Same,
but like, yeah, I think we had this discussion during Black Friday last year, where it's like a game's like 35% off and it's like $55. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
That's the price I wanted a discount from.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I want those days when the games were $25, $30, and $35 at Black Friday, not $40, $45, and $50.
Yeah.
Real quick before we move on to the movie, which I don't think Earl and I are going to have a ton to say about Silent Hill, but I
will be silent on it.
The World Cup's going, so I
know,
yeah. Do we win tonight? I don't know.
No, we're tied right now. Last I checked, we scored like both teams. Is it USA? No, not Paraguay. Who are we playing tonight?
Turkey.
Turkey. And both teams scored within the first 10 minutes. Because like, I think we scored it within the first five. And
it's almost over.
I was at a bar. It might be. I mean, there'll be a kickout. We have like 5 minutes of regulation, and then there'll be added time. But right now it's 2-2. So we'll see. I think
go ahead.
I was going to say, I think it will still be good for us. We're leading in wins for the division.
We've locked up first place. We can't finish any worse than first.
Okay.
So, which is why we did not play all of our starters today. So. But yes. Go ahead,
Jeff. I have a couple games I want to talk about. Briefly. I played Tetris Forever.
Which is the it's the documentary game.
Yeah, and so it's from Digital Eclipse, who did Atari 50, and more recently Mortal Kombat, like Legacy Collection or something like that. But yeah, they're the guys who like kind of basically do documentaries with, you know, you could play the games as you go through. I thought Tetris Forever was awesome. My only complaint with it is the same thing that I have the complaint with all of their games, which is like there should have been way more Tetris games in it for you to play. It feels like all of their games, like the Atari 50 is the other one I've played. Once you get to the modern era, you're just reading about the modern era or watching videos about the modern era, and you're just like, okay, but why can't I play Tetris Worlds? Or why can't, you know what I mean? Like anything past the 90s, like why can't I play that?
Yeah.
But that said, I think that Tetris has a uniquely interesting history, and so it was really cool to see here. I loved one of the guys that was involved in the history of Tetris. This guy, he's like a Hispanic guy, but he has like the whitest name ever. His name is like Hank Rogers. He's awesome. Yep.
He's the guy that he originally licensed.
He would like port it to everything. Like he's just a really smart dude. I love, there's one interview he does where we're talking to him and he's talking about being in college and he's like, you know, one of my professors told me if I keep up doing what I'm doing, I'm never going to get my diploma. And he's like, you're mistaken. Like, I'm not here for a diploma. I'm here for an education. And he did what a lot of smart people do, which is like, once he felt like he had surpassed anything he was going to learn, he dropped out of college. He's like, fuck this. I'm going to go start doing shit. And the other cool thing, I personally really like, Digital Eclipse made a new Tetris game out of it called Tetris Time Warp, which I thought was really neat. Every once in a while, you'll be like, so say you're playing two players, like all of a sudden you'll send a time warp over to the other player and they get stuck in like a 1985 version of Tetris and they get like certain conditions they have to meet to kind of score well and get out of it. Like you have 30 seconds to clear four lines at once or whatever it says. But it's just really neat. It's just like mixes it up and like all of a sudden you're in Game Boy Tetris. All of a sudden you're in the prototype version of Tetris. And interestingly, I thought the prototype version of Tetris was just made with brackets off the keyboard. Mm-hmm. I thought that was better than the MS-DOS version of Tetris. But yeah, I'm just like, where is... Like, I get, like, yeah, maybe you can't get Tetris DS or whatever, but I just, like, all of their games feels like, what are all the things we could get for, like, basically no money? And then, like... So you're just missing part of the history. Like, it would have been nice to have a version of Puyo Puyo Tetris or whatever, you know, like. But other than that, fantastic. I mean, it was on sale for $20. Like, that is a perfect buy at $20. And another game.
It's great.
Yeah. Anything more to say about it. Like, I really liked it. And I'll still be like, listen, you want to play some Tetris Time Warp? So it has, like, a new version of Tetris that I think is like somewhat compelling. Is it as good as like Tetris Effect? No. It's neat.
Yeah.
Another game I bought on sale, and it was on sale for $10, and this is the perfect price for this. And this kind of circles back to Star Fox. Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection was on sale for $10. Normally, I think $30.
Yes.
And I got a huge kick out of it. Like, and like Star Fox, it's, you know, it's like 5-6 level. It's very, very short. But like, to me, it was a better buy than Star Fox because one, it was $10, not $50. And two, it's a new game. It's not Star Fox 64. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
when it's not Ghosts and Goblins again. Right.
Yeah,
it's like a new Ghosts and Goblins
game. Like, you know, like the first level feels very, very much like the first level that you've played on Super Nintendo or Nintendo.
Sure.
But like, it is its own new game. It's very, very true. Like, it feels like, hey, if there was a sequel to Super Ghosts and Goblins, whatever it was called,
this would be it. It's just like 30 years later. And if you're a fan of that series, absolutely fucking pick this up, especially on sale. It is ridiculously hard. But this has an easy mode, like a very easy mode. Like, you know, it's like knight, you know, squire. And I think the lowest level is like page. And on that lowest difficulty level, you cannot die. But that does not mean the game is easy. Like, so like you could be fighting a boss, you'll die, and you respawn right where you were. So it's like, cool. You're gonna get like the final boss. I don't know if I ever would have beaten otherwise, right? That said, there are platforming segments you have to get through, and Chris, you've seen them.
Yeah.
These platforming segments are insanely hard, and those you cannot die your way through. So like if you get like 3, 4, 5 minutes into an insane platforming section and you die, it's one of those things where like you go back to the checkpoint at the beginning of it. And
so you still have to do the challenging platforming.
You do have to get through that. It's the combat you can get through. Yeah. And this platforming, I have to like, it's really like, it'll challenge you, Chris. Like, I think, Chris, you should definitely, like, if this is still on sale for $10, you should get it.
I bought it after you it's only $10. And I was like,
I think you'll really dig it.
So I was like looking to see if, I think it's only available on Switch. So I was like, fuck it. Sure.
Yeah, it is. I got a huge kick out of it. Like, I showed you the one part in the final level. Like, you're going up these platforms. You're basically getting chased up these platforms. So you keep going vertically up. And they disappear below you as you go up. And I must have did it like 50 times, like where I just get fucked over somewhere along the way and fall to my death. And every single time I fucking laughed at it. I was just like, this is just so fucking funny. Like how, like you have to go with that mindset of like, this game is going to punch me in the fucking face. And you laugh at it and you'll eventually, you will get through it. I mean, go ahead, Chris, try to play it on normal or something. Good luck. But like, yeah, and I love the art style, the music. I love the art style, the music to it. And it's just, again, at $10, I couldn't recommend this enough for people who remember that era and remember these games. It is a love letter to those old games and it's really well done. But again, it's, like, if you have no attachment to these games, you'll probably play it for 2 seconds and be like, this is fucking bullshit. But I do have some attachment. Like, I used to really be obsessed with those games when I was a kid. I never got, you know, maybe to the end of the first level, right? Like,
yeah.
But
they're fun. They've always been hard, but...
Yes.
It does sound like what you talked about, the page mode. It sounds like they added that later, because I remember when the game came out, like people were like, this game is brutal. And it sounds like it is brutal, but like there was no like reprieve from
I weirdly remember getting bad reviews, but then I looked up reviews now and like I think like IGN gave it like an 8 or something, you know, like it was positive about it. So I was like, huh. I remember getting like a 4. I don't know. Dude, again, for $30, I don't know that I would recommend it because it's like Star Fox. It's like an hour long. Like, it's very short, right?
Yeah. It's an arcade game.
Yeah, but if it's still on sale, I can't recommend it enough. I got a huge kick out of it. I really thought it was cool.
That's cool. I will be playing that at some point. It is downloaded onto my Switch.
Hell yeah.
Just a quick aside, because Jeff mentioned Tetris, and it made me remember. But I actually did go to a video game bar this weekend. So I went to Wonderville, which I think I have mentioned before on this show. It's an indie arcade bar in New York City, or in Brooklyn, so New York City. The big thing is like it's one of the few places that has Killer Queens in an arcade cabinet. Killer Queens, I think, is on all consoles, whatever. I've talked about it. But I went there. It's always fun to go because to see... A lot of it is like Yoku games, or like I said, very unique experimental games. I didn't play anything too experimental this time because a few of them were out of commission. Real quick, I think I mentioned Armager in this before. There was a game called Doom Drop. This is what you made me think of it, because it's a block dropping game. It's kind of like a mixture of Tetris and, I want to say, Puyo Puyo, where it's like Tetris. You get pieces and you shot them into. Dr. Mario. You get a piece. It has like two colors. It's like red and blue or whatever. And you'll drop them, and then you'll, you know, set up patterns, and you'll create your. You have to connect four of them for them to. But the difference is, unlike Tetris, it's not like as soon as you connect four, it does not break. So you can keep on building up. You can also kind of build up a combo where it's like, okay, so once these like five pieces, once you connect more than four, you can drop all of them at once. Once these four pieces fall down, okay, these two are going to fall, and this one's going to form a combo over here, and this one's going to, when that falls, it's going to fall a combo. So you kind of want to build up a combo so that like the pieces fall into places with the other pieces. And as you're doing that, the stage is rising up. So it's interesting because it took me a second to realize, because again, I think in Tetris where like you put the pieces down. The three buttons is a button to rotate, you know, which is the top piece, which is the bottom piece. There's a drop button, which just puts the piece in place. And then there's a piece where, okay, I'm ready to, you know, it's a satanic game. So you're sacrificing those pieces to a demon or whatever. But like doing that instead of the combo, it's a really fun game. I enjoyed it. I don't know if it's on anything. Like I said, I just went to the arcade. I will look into it. The other one was something called Bumpy Grumpy, which is kind of like Paperboy, I guess. It is one of those, it's kind of a game you might have played on a mobile phone before, where you're just kind of avoiding obstacles, but it's really fun that Burnout used to have that. Burnout Paradise, where like, you know, when you swerve right before you hit a car and like a near collision. So that's what you're trying to go for. You're not just trying to avoid them. You're trying to avoid them as close as possible.
Okay.
And then and then you get stuff like, you know, there's traffic. So like if traffic's coming in the opposite direction, you have to like slow down or stop so you don't get hit up, get run over. You're trying to pick up gas and the newspaper and a bunch of other stuff to get bonus points. Again, it's a very arcadey game. It's a ton of fun. They don't pay me for anything. But if you're ever in New York, I think one of those are a great place to check out. We have four arcades as well, but you get a bunch of classic games. But again, these are a lot of games that you don't see anywhere else because a lot of them are like very unique, one and done experiences.
That Doom Drop that you were explaining. It looks like one, the arcade cabinet just debuted in March of this year at that bar you were talking about, Wonderville. And it's like an indie arcade cabinet. So it doesn't look like it's available a whole lot of other places.
Okay.
So that one sounds really neat.
It's a ton of fun. Very simple, but like once it gets you hooked in.
Bumpy Grumpy is available on Steam if anybody wants to check that out. And as I said, World Cup's going on, so I want to play some soccer games. So I started up Super Mario Strikers on the GameCube app and played that for a bunch of hours. That game's still really good.
It is actually the best one in the franchise.
Chris, yeah.
You just cursed the USA. Turkey.
Did I? Did they win?
Not a goal.
Yeah.
They're in extra time. So it's not over yet, but likely. I agree, Earl. Super Mario Strikers is the best one of those games. Because I also then, like, I played through all the single player content in Strikers, which, to be fair, not a lot. It's cups, like you basically play in a tournament style thing. So I was like, all right, well, I finished that. Let me go back to Battle League, which I didn't love when it came out, and I still don't love it. It's fine. I don't think it looks as nice as Strikers because it's a different perspective. It's a little bit higher up. I think Strikers just plays so much better because it's like only like two or three buttons you have to play.
Better than what?
Than Battle League, the one that was on the Switch.
Yeah.
Oh, the newer
Strikers Mario game,
Soccer. Yeah. Okay. The problem with all of the sequels.
I've never played this series.
The problem with all the is that they try to complicate it. They make it more complicated. And I understand like you, but the beauty of the original game is how simple it is. You pick a character and you pick a squadron of backup.
Yep.
I think the next one is the one that introduces like you pick everybody's an individual character. Or I think you still pick a character and then you get like you can make like have Monty Mo and Cooper Trooper as like your backup. But it's not if you just pick one of them, you pick like three different ones. But that also introduced that really stupid again. I like the Super Strikes. The Super Strikes are a very fun mechanic because of the risk reward in them. It was the next one that introduced this, like, you can score up to 5 goals at once. And I'm like, no. Like, 2 was fine. 5 is insane. Yeah. It's like, you got to do the motion control. So you got to, like, put your hands up to block them with the actual control. Yeah, it's like, no. And then Battle League is the one that introduces, like, we're going to give you armor and stuff like that. And your kit has gear. Different. Yeah.
So dumb. And there's just way more. And I never played the Wii one, so I don't know where the complexity in that one is or in the controls, but there's just too much going on the controller in Battle League as well. Just like the base controls, there's just too much.
Because I think there's like, because the two button combinations, like in terms of the first one, like you said, is pass, shoot, and there's like gob and weapons.
Yeah.
Yep. And I guess juke, yeah. But this one, it's like, okay. You can pass the ball, but you can also like press B and A, and you'll do like a jump step. And like if you do this and that, you do a. I'm like, no. I don't want to remember controllers. I want to like, give my friends a controller. Like this is shoot, this is pass. You'll figure it out.
Yep. Which explains why when I had it up there, like I would like put it out for when kids came over for parties and stuff, and they would play it for like a minute, but then like, hey, do you have other things on this? And they would go back to playing like Smash or Mario Kart. It's just like, it's not an easy game to just jump into and play, which it should be, because it should be an arcade sports game.
Yes.
Anyway, that's the Strikers games. Play the original. It's on the GameCube app.
And you're saying that is not easy to jump into?
No, the original is, yeah. It's very, very easy. It's very, very fun. I also think it has the most personality because, as Earl said, like, you pick your character and then your backup team, which could be, like, Koopas or the Hammer Brothers or, like, and in the newer ones, it's like I just played a game where it was, like, me, Paulina, Peach, and Toad. That was my team. And then I played, like, Wario. Peach, so they have like duplicate characters. Like you're playing against like an alternate version of the character you're using. It's like that to me. That's annoying. It's like a minor annoyance, but it's like I just think the original has more personality. It's like this is Mario's team or this is Peach's team, and Peach is playing with a crew of Toads or a crew of Koopas. It just feels like more like a team that the character you chose is leading as opposed to, okay, well, we're going to use all these Mario characters and there could be duplicates. Like you might end up playing against yourself.
Side question.
Yep.
Do any of you guys play, I know it's not called FIFA anymore, but do any of you guys still play like EA Sports?
FC.
I haven't played it since it, change to FC. Those games, they can be easy to play. Like if you,
I used to. Okay, so back in the day, my friend was really into the World Cup and all that, and like we would play FIFA, and I thought it was a blast. Even though I don't really know soccer, like I don't know the ins and outs, and that's like most sports for me outside of football, I guess. Like I just don't know all the rules, but like I still got by and had fun with it.
Soccer is maybe the easiest of the video game sports to get into.
Yeah.
Because it's it's simple.
I did a lot of just kicking the ball really far across the field.
And again, that is, I mean, that is a strategy.
That's what I used to do in real life when I would play it in gym. I would play defense and just kick the fuck out of that ball. Like, goodbye, get this out of here.
Okay. Well, real quick, Earl and I both watched Silent Hill 2006.
God bless you for your commitment. No, I'm not that committed.
Jeff didn't watch it, and
I almost watched the new one.
Well, we'll get to that soon. No, not soon.
I don't know about soon.
there are so many terrible, terrible video game movies to get through before then.
Yeah, and this is—I'm not going to say terrible, but it's not.
It's not terrible. Good. It's forgettable.
I remember thinking, like, here's the thing: I seen it when it came out. And my thought was when it came out, I was like, this feels more like a movie than any video game movie. Like where like it just felt cinematic to me. Like I don't know. Like
I think it's a good looking movie. I think visually it's good. I think the soundtrack is decent. I agree with you, Jeff. I just think that I think 20 years later, video game movies have come a long way. And this is just like a boring horror movie.
I don't know. Yeah, like,
I
didn't think it was great or perfect or anything. Like,
you were just celebrating. It didn't feel like it looked decent.
The thing I hate about a lot of video game movies, which you said they've advanced a lot, where it's like, I think the Mario movies are crap. It's just like, oh, hey, remember Yoshi? Hey, remember Star Fox? Like, this felt like it was going for a mood, you know?
And you are accurate. I do think it does go for a mood, and I think it does. But I think what Chris is saying is also, like, it's, I think for me, as somebody who's really never played Silent Hill, it's just not really a good horror film.
Yeah.
The first time I saw it, I remember, like, enjoying it and watching it. Now I'm like, this is just kind of a mess. And it's kind of, like, maybe because I remembered the movie, I'm like, it's so kind of, yes, of course that's the daughter. Yes, of course that's the mother. Why are you bringing your daughter to this random ass town just because she has, for some odd reason, I guess spoilers or whatever. For some reason in my head, I remember it. I thought, what's his name, died in this movie, but he doesn't. The guy who always dies, what is his name? Sean Bean. And I remember the ending where it's like, oh, like, they think they're safe and they're back home, but they're not back home. I mean, the movie makes it very clear because one's in a very, very pew tinted light and the other one isn't. But yeah, I just, like, I watched it on Sunday, and outside of that stuff, which I remember before the movie, I could not really tell you what happened.
Same, Earl. When I first saw it 20 years ago, I was like, "This is pretty good." Like, for, and I mean, comparatively to video game movies at the time, I guess it was pretty good. But watching it now, I was like, "This," and I watched it today. I'm not sure I can tell you much more than you can from 4 days ago.
Yeah.
It's very dull. Like, they go to this town because the girl is having like dreams or visions of Silent Hill. She is somehow tied in, linked with a girl that this cult in Silent Hill killed. They burned her alive because they thought that the child was a demon or was bringing a demon in. And so that brought the mom and this daughter to Silent Hill, as well as this cop who followed them there. And you get a lot of Silent Hill-y stuff, like where time warps and it goes into like the demon zone and everything becomes very industrialized and there's monsters roaming around. And I think all that stuff looks pretty good. Like, even now, 20 years later, a lot of it does, like, I think, what's it, Christoph Gans? Is that the director?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think he did a really good job on recreating what, like, bringing what Silent Hill looks like in a game to the movies.
This guy who has devoted his life to just making
Silent Hill. Silent Hill. Yeah.
Wait, was he the one who did the new one?
Yeah, he did the new one, too.
Yeah. But there's things about, like, this is the thing about video games, like Silent Hill 2, I think it's, like, a really, I think, impressive at the time narrative for a video game. But, like, even that, it's, like, you get this letter from your dead wife to go to this town, and you go? Like, what? Like, that doesn't translate to a movie, because it's, like, who the fuck would do that? It makes no sense. Oh, how did my dead wife write me a letter? Why am I going to this town? And then you get there, and you're, like, this town looks fucking spooky as shit. Let's go look around.
Well, to their credit, I will say this much. The way to get her into town is by having a car accident and her daughter being abducted.
So in this original one, right?
The that I will give them credit for how to get her into Silent Hill proper.
I'm just saying, there's like video gamey things, you know what I mean? Like, it's just where it's just like, yeah, that doesn't make sense as a story.
And the same thing with her gut. The reason she goes to Silent Hill is because her daughter wakes up in the middle of the night screaming, "Silent Hill, Silent Hill." It's like, we gotta go, we gotta see what's. I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
No thanks, yeah.
That does not make any sense to me whatsoever.
Oh, and Earl, just like you, I also thought Sean Bean died in this movie.
Yeah.
That was my memory of it. He is not dead at the end of it.
The other thing that I noted, and I don't, maybe it was because of the mood I was in, it was very much, I forget the Heavy Rain meme. It's like press X for Sean or press X for, what's the kid's name?
Oh, Jason?
Yes, Jason. Because they say Sharon's name a lot in this movie.
Yeah. Sharon!
I gotta find my daughter Sharon. Where's Sharon? Sharon! Like, I know her daughter's name was Peace. I don't know anybody else's, but I know Sharon. But yeah, this is, I mean, my gut is like C or D tier. You'll see high D. Wow. And that, again, it's not a bad movie. It's just kind of there.
So C or D, Earl?
Yeah.
Which one?
Like I said, where are you putting it?
I'm going to put it at a C. I have Blood Rain at a D, and this is a better movie than Blood Rain.
Yes, it's a better movie than Blood Rain. Not a high bar to cross.
No. It's just super forgettable. Like,
yeah, that's the issue, really.
There's a couple cool scenes, I think, but like nothing that like the. As a whole, also, it's long as hell. It's 2 hours long. Like, just maybe 20 minutes too long. Yeah, it's way too long. So there we go. Silent Hill at a C. Earl,
and neither of you guys like the new one?
I've not seen the new one.
I didn't like the new one. I don't think it's as bad as people are spouting about it.
I really want to see it. I know it's on Hulu now, so like, I just... It'll happen someday soon, but like I'm interested in it. Like, no matter what everyone says to me about it, I'm like, I don't know. It's an adaptation of 2, which is a game I think is really cool. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I don't think it's as bad as people are making it out to be, but I didn't think it was very good either.
Okay.
Earl, what's next?
Well, I can give you the great news up front. It is a much shorter movie.
Thank God. It is
under 90 minutes.
All right.
It's an Ubo movie, isn't it?
It is not an Ubo movie.
Oh, okay.
It is. I will say, I actually do have fun with this movie. I'm going to say it's not a good movie, but I have fun with it. And I also love the name because the name is very stupid. It is DOA, Dead or Alive. That is the actual name of the movie. I don't know what it is.
DOA.
Dead or Alive.
That's the name. That's how the movie, like the title is DOA Dead or Alive.
The actual name of the movie is DOA Dead or Alive.
I like it. That's terrible, but I like it.
I don't know. Maybe there's a movie called Dead or Alive already, and maybe they need people to know what DOA stood for, but I think doing both is just so redundant.
It is.
By the way, I got the new trailer for Street Fighter tonight. And I am not a Street Fighter fan, like, at all. But I imagine if I was a Street Fighter fan, I would be so excited for that stupid fucking movie. They got the dude with the fucking spiky blonde hair, like, the flat top. It looks exactly the same as the video game. It's so fucking stupid.
It's
Cody Rhodes. Yeah.
Fucking 50 Cent.
The whole, everything about it looks
everything about it is so unbelievable. Like, I almost want to go see it. And, like, again, I have, like, zero connection to Street Fighter. I could never get into it. just look like they nailed it.
I'm looking forward to that one. It'd be fun. All right. Well, DOA, Dead or Alive, is our movie for July. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Right after 4th of July, if Tony can escape the Great American State Fair, whatever the hell it's
God
called.
Help me.
Jeff, say goodnight.
Good luck.